couldn't block the front seven of the Cardinals. The defense, you know, we just cannot get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. We just, they have all day to throw. They really are just killing us. Jay Cutler killed us. You know, we gave him all day, and he was, you know, he has those two big wide receivers who were both hurt last week, and they still found a way to beat us using them. It's really the first half off defense is exceptional. We let up a total of 12 points in the first three games. But in the second half, it's a completely different story. We're getting outscored by almost 45 points in the second half. And you cannot win football games that way. The second half is where we need to close. We need to step up the defense, force some turnovers, force some punts. But at this time, we just cannot do anything because the pressure on the quarterback is not there. All these teams are playing from behind because we're up after the first half. And in the second half, all they're doing is throwing, and we have no pressure. We have no rush. Yes, we're missing Alden Smith and Navarro Bowman, but we still should have some replacements for them so that we can continue the season. You know, we don't want to lose the season in the first eight games before they're back. You know, we have Seattle in our division. We have Arizona in our division. Both of them are going to be contenders, and I really, really hope that we can get the pass rush back to where it was. Also, let's talk about the penalties on defense. So far this season, we've had 9 penalties on third downs to keep the opponent's drive alive, which means it is third down and 5. We stopped them, but there was a holding penalty on us, or there is a, which happened a couple times, a roughing the passer, hitting the quarterback late, or hitting the quarterback with your helmet. And out of those 9 times that we've let up, that given them free first downs, seven times they have scored on them. That is huge. That is huge. That is more times letting up, keeping the drive alive for the opponent this year so far in 3 games than all of last year in 16 games. It is a real, real disappointment. So I was reading some blogs, some articles, and people are putting this on Harbaugh. They said that Harbaugh is yelling at the referees constantly, always riding them. So referees know that, understand that, and they kind of look for the penalties against the Niners, which is not a good thing. You see, we had Patrick Willis roughing the passer, which was a very borderline call. Supposedly, he hit him with the crown of his helmet. You know, there's a bunch of different things. I saw he hit him with his face mask, which is allowed in the chest. You know, he wasn't up at the head, but again, the quarterback should have flags nowadays because there is no, if you touch the quarterback, it is a personal foul. I want to talk about Jimmy Ward, our first-round pick from Northern Illinois this year. So far this year, he's already let up 3 touchdowns one-on-one. Yes, 2 of them were against Brandon Marshall, who's a 6'5 big receiver, and Jimmy Ward's a 5'11 free safety moving to nickelback. He really is a, you know, not a big cornerback that can play against them, but he still has been beat 3 times for touchdown, each one of them over 15 yards. And we really expect high things from our first round pick. Look at last year, Reed. Look at Patrick Willis. Look at Alden Smith. All these guys on defense have been stars after our first round pick, and it's really, really. Hopefully, he can get it together because Jimmy Ward is something we need, especially once we play the Seattle Seahawks. You know, they have Percy Harvin and. We have to have speed against his speed, and Jimmy Ward at this point does not look like a good cover cornerback or even a nickelback. I would maybe like to see Parrish Cox move down there. I know he's been playing cornerback, and he's been playing well. I know we have some injuries. Yeah, we have the cornerback Chris Culliver is playing all right. He's not fully healthy, and so I think that. As the season progresses, Jimmy Ward's gonna get better, but I need to see it now because we cannot be losing games. We're 1-2 already. You know, last year only we went 1-2 last year in the beginning of the season, but we lost to Seattle and Indianapolis, 2 playoff teams. And I don't know if Arizona and the Bears are gonna make it. They definitely have the possibility to make it, but those are 2 teams that I definitely thought we should beat. Losing this game really is heartbreaking. If we lose to Seattle and we play our hearts out and they play their hearts out and they beat us fair and square, yes, yes, I can take those kind of losses. But playing teams that I think we should beat, especially Arizona, who had a backup quarterback, Drew Stanton, he's had a handful of starts, and they don't have much of a running game at all. But they did gash us for some big yards. Andre Ellington had 18 carries for 62 yards, and he gashed us for a 20 yard gain. Drew Stanton even rolled out of the pocket sometimes. There was a couple of third downs where he rolled out of the pocket and was able to pick up the first down. That cannot happen. That really cannot happen. And really was the most disappointing thing on defense was letting this rookie, John Brown, this little speedster, get behind us twice and score two touchdowns, which should not have happened. This is crazy. A rookie beating our safety and our quarterback, and Drew Stanton being able to just throw it to him easily, it's so frustrating to watch as a Niner fan. So frustrating, because we're so used to the last 3 years seeing our defense just perform at the highest level always in the clutch moments. Yes, of course, Navarro and Alden's not there, but still, we have Patrick, we have Reed, we have the Cowboy, Justin Smith. It's just we need to find a balance of how to play with these guys and how to play without Alden and play without Navarro. I think that we came into the season thinking that we knew how to do that, but I really don't think we knew how to do it. I think we definitely overestimated how our backups were going to perform this year. Let's look forward into the next game versus the 3-0 Eagles. They're a high paced offense. I was watching Monday Night Football, and they were running plays in 6 seconds, 7 seconds after the ball snap. They do their play, gets put down. At 6 seconds, they're back up to the line. And you know what this does? This causes defense to become extremely, extremely tired. Because they cannot substitute, because if they substitute, the play is going to be run. There's going to be penalties for too many men on the field. There's going to be men out of position. So what this Chip Kelly Oregon offense has done for the Eagles is made them a fast-paced team. How do you beat a fast-paced team like this? Three and outs. So three and outs, you make them go three and out, and they punt the ball. They had the ball for a minute and 25 seconds. That's probably how long it takes for three plays for them. That means their defense is only sitting on the sideline for that long. So if we can have long drives, make their defense tired, and we can play defense and hold them, that's the way to beat the Eagles. But you have seen the Eagles have come back two out of their three times. Big first game of the year, they came back in the second half, scored 21 points in the second half. They really are just such a high-powered offense. They can break an 80-yard play at any time. They got LeSean McCoy. They got Darren Sproles now. They have Nick Foles, was a great quarterback from the University of Arizona, came out, and he just runs that offense so well. He just sits in the pocket, doesn't have to scramble. He just sits there and fires the ball to Macklin, to Sproles out of the backfield, to Zach Ertz, the Stanford tight end. They just have weapons, and their offensive line is not great, but because they get their plays so quickly and their defenses that they face are so tired, that it really causes the defensive linemen to not rush the passer so hard. So what type of offense are we going to run against this Eagles defense? And what I saw last week was no running. So this is what we got to do. We got to run the ball. But we also need a fast-paced offense. I think if we kind of rush, you know, we've always wait till the last second to call the snaps. How many times have we called a timeout right before the 1 second on the play clock? It really is just so aggravating when they do that. You know, you're just like, come on, call the play. But they don't. So that's why I think we have this fast-paced offense. If we hurry up to the line, get the play called in from the sideline while everyone's at the line and call audibles from, we'll be able to play the play clock better, you know, use the play clock, be able to run motions and not be so hurried in the huddle. And the reason why we run down the play clock is because we have such intricate plays. You see all the motions, all the tight ends moving, all the wide receivers moving, you know, even linemen you've seen move from one side to the other. It's just in the personnel. We have so many personnel packages that we have to send in. So we have to find everyone, call them all in. The other players have to come on. It's just such a hassle. I love the way the Eagles have their – they just keep rotating in one player, and they just keep going. They just keep going. Each player knows what their role is, knows what to do, and they just – their offense is looking high-powered this year. So this is a must-win for us. All of our divisional opponents, the Cardinals, the Seahawks, and the Rams are all on byes. So this is the week that we really cannot lose, because we need to gain that half a game back. We need to get the momentum back. We're playing – our schedule is extremely hard this year. We need to become more of a dominant a team. We need to assert ourselves. And I think this Eagle game can be really a game that we can show the rest of the league that these last two games – we're just kind of a way to understand how our team works without those major players, Alden and Navarro, and Vernon and Vance McDonald. People don't know much Vance McDonald. He doesn't make many catches, but he is an outstanding blocker. Last year, our run game, when Vernon Davis went down, played so well still because he was able to keep the intensity, keep the blocking that Vernon Davis has done for the past 7 years. Vernon Davis wasn't a great blocker when he first came into the league. He wanted the ball, he wanted to score touchdowns, and he wanted to show off. But now he is a blocking tight end, and he's probably in the top five blocking tight ends in the NFL this year. So how do we slow down this Eagles offense? Oh, that's what everyone's asking in the league right now. How do we slow them down? Well, I have a few ideas. I think maybe we need to get that pressure on the quarterback. You know, we need to get – and we have not been getting – Lemonnier, the DN who's come in for Allen Smith, has done nothing. We've had 4 sacks in 3 games, and 3 of them were from Justin Smith after great coverage downfield and the quarterback kind of scrambling and Justin being able to get him. It's just frustrating. Just watch the quarterback have 7 seconds in the pocket. All I want them to do is get to the quarterback. It is so frustrating. I just want them to play as we've seen them before. So if we play like we can against the Eagles, like we all know that we can without Navarro, without Alden, we know they can play well still. You know, there's always that possibility of us being able to stop them defensively. But the thing is, we're so young in the secondary. You know, Antoine Bethea is probably our oldest player. He's a strong safety. And then we got Reed, who's a free safety, and he's a young. It's his second year. He's been beat a couple times this year. We got young cornerbacks in Culliver and Parrish Cox and Chris Cook and Jimmy Ward. Our secondary is going to be tested this week, and I hope they need to step up their game, because without them this week, it's going to be a long week. They can put up a lot of points very, very quickly. What type I was talking about the offense that we should run. Give Carlos Hyde the ball more than 5 touches. That's the max he's gotten this year, 5 touches. He has 2 touchdowns. We've all seen his explosive running. Give him the ball. Who cares if he could stop a couple times? Just keep feeding the ball. He's going to wear that defense down. He's going to run clock, which you have to do. You have to keep the Eagles offense on the sideline. If they're out on the field a bunch, they're going to score, because they just run such fast-paced offense that our defense will be so tired, as I said before. And Greg Roman needs to be less conservative and throw the ball down the field against this Eagles secondary. This Eagles secondary is not their strength. Their strength is their D-line. If we can attack their secondary, if we can give Kaepernick some time in the pocket, we'll be able to move the ball down the field, and we'll be able to score touchdowns and not field goals. Oh, that's my rant so far on the Niners. And when we come back, we are going to talk about how the Giants are going to get into the playoffs and how they will do in the playoffs. All right, I will be right back. Saying there's nothing you won't do to get me to say yes. You're impossible to resist. But I wouldn't bet your heart on it. It's like I'm finally
myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much, and my scars remind me that
you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. Welcome to Bosco's Breaks. The sudden death last month of 63-year-old comedian and actor Robin Williams was ruled to be suicide by Marin County authorities. While suicide was the event that ended Williams' life, the why behind the event is complex. Williams' publicist Mara Boxbaum released a statement that Williams had been seeking treatment for severe depression. The word suicide can leave the impression that it is an individual's choice or decision to die. Dr. Stephen Ilardi, author of The Depression Cure and associate professor of psychology at the University of Kansas, has found that because depression is such a misunderstood condition, there are a lot of people who have little sympathy for those who resort to suicide. Ilardi says depression is a mental illness, not a lifestyle choice. Like cancer or any other disease, it is unavoidable, but unlike cancer, it is more often than not a hidden illness. According to Save.org, a website devoted to suicide awareness, suicide takes the lives of nearly 40,000 Americans every year, making it the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. Considering that one person takes their own life every 14 minutes in the U.S. alone, experts say there's clearly much more to discover about the brain's processing in order to battle the illness and stereotypes surrounding it. Although Williams' suicide was both shocking and heartbreaking to many, it signifies the challenges involved with treating depression and other mental illnesses in general. According to mental health experts, effective medications and treatments are available for even the most severe cases of depression. Nonetheless, the approach to finding which remedy will succeed can be a frustrating experience and can lead to a delay in a patient's recovery. Depression is currently treated with both medication and therapy, but there's still room for improvement, according to Dr. Winston Chung, a psychiatrist at the Cedar Pacific Medical Foundation, who specializes in mental and mood disorders. Chung also said that researchers need to better understand the biology of mental health issues in order to reduce the stigma and produce more accurate treatment. If you or a student in need is looking for a campus resource, you may seek the Dominican University's counseling service by calling 415-485-3258. These appointments are free to all students, available Monday through Friday, and are completely confidential. That number was 415-485-3258. Along with the campus resource, there are many resources in the San Francisco Bay Area for anyone suffering from depression or suicidal thoughts. The Suicide Prevention Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. The San Francisco General Hospital Psychiatric Emergency Services can be called at 415-206-8125. The San Francisco Suicide Prevention 24-Hour Hotline can be reached at 415-781-0500. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, Harley D here with your 3-minute break. 3 minutes of the wildest, weirdest, wackiest news to get your mind off your day. Let's get it started. A YouTube video posted earlier this week appears to show a virtual reality headset hooked up to a game where the sole objective is to squeeze an anime character's breasts. The experience is linked to a real-life set of foam breasts, while the game, if you can call it that, is just generally sad in a lonely adolescent way. The Daily Dot notes that the game does nothing to dispel the unfortunate stereotypes of gamers being basement-dwelling males with zero experience interacting with the opposite sex. The game is apparently called Booby Squeezing Simulator. There's an old saying, you have to fight fire with fire. A woman in Los Angeles is threatening to take the same approach with lazy dog owners, except she's using poop instead of flames. Annie Pierce, a street artist and muralist, is so angry at her neighbors who let their canines defecate on her yard that she's posted a public warning to anyone who doesn't clean up after their pets. The cardboard sign she posted says that Pierce will, and I quote, personally follow you back to your home, wait until you get inside, pull down my pants, and take a huge dump on your doorstep and on the windshield of your car. The sign is posted at the corner of Wilshire Boulevard and Sweetser Avenue in LA and has gotten a lot of positive reaction from her neighbors. When authorities in a Chinese city realize that they're never going to be able to put a stop to texting while walking, they decided to go for minimizing the risk instead. So they set up a special lane for pedestrians who are hopelessly addicted to their mobile phones. The lane was created on Foreigner Street, a tourist hotspot in Chingon. The sidewalk is basically divided into two halves, one labeled cell phone, walk at your own risk, and the other marked no cell phones. There are lots of elderly people and children in our street, and walking with your cell phone may cause unnecessary collisions here, said Nyong Ching, spokesperson for the district's property management company. She also hinted that the initiative was meant to be satirical, to highlight the dangers of texting and walking. In Massachusetts, police have arrested a man they say broke into a home and cooked himself a snack. Rockland police officers responded to a home at 1:40 a.m. Wednesday morning after getting a call from the homeowner. The homeowner woke up to a loud bang from the kitchen. When the resident went to investigate, he found an intruder cooking corn on the cob on the stove. He told the intruder to leave, and the two men briefly scuffled. Police finally arrested 69-year-old John Dalton and charged him with breaking and entering with intent to commit a felony and assault and battery. Police say Dalton, who was clearly intoxicated, forced his way inside the door. I'm Harley D. signing off. This is radio.dominican.edu.
Welcome back. You are back on with DJ Bus Stop on Banter by the Bay. Now I want to get into the San Francisco Giants. This has been my diehard favorite team since I was a little boy, and I watch every single game. But, you know, right now they are not playing at top of their game. They are losing games. They're not scoring runs. They're just so hot and cold. They played, if you look back 2 weeks ago, I was the complete opposite spectrum. I was like, oh my God, they're going to beat the Dodgers out for the division. They're scoring, averaging 6 runs a game. Oh, of course, then here happens. Angel Bagan gets hurt again and has to have season-ending surgery. We all know what happened last year when Angel Bagan went out. We were 35 games under 500 when he was gone, and we were 15 games above 500 when he was back. He is our captain. He's our leader, you know. But everyone says Buster Posey. Yes, Buster Posey is our leader, but who's the person that gets on for Buster? Who's the one that scores all these RBIs? But who's scoring those runs? That's Pagan. He's setting up everything. And he's the captain of the outfield. He's center field. Plays that position with so much gusto. He goes diving all over the place. He is going to be a very missed part of this team. But can we win without him? I don't know. Can we win with Gregor Blanco and Juan Perez in the outfield? I do not think so. But you know, Sabian had a chance this year to make a move for another fourth outfielder because, you know, Pagan and Morse are both have histories of getting injured. And we all know Pagan is just can be an all-star superstar. But if he can stay, he can't stay healthy. He just can't. He's always hurt. You know, remember last year when he hit that inside the park home run and tore his hamstring? You know, it's just, oh, it's just that came from the best moment of the season into the worst because he's just our, he's the head of the, you know, he's the start of the lineup. He's get everyone going. He's vocal. He's passionate. He's such a, he has flair, you know, flair that our team needs. We don't have much flair. Him and Hunter Pence are the flair of our team. They're like our characters, you know, Buster, you know, he's just the MVP candidate, MVP catcher, Gold Glove catcher, Rookie of the Year. He is a stud, 2-time World Series champ. He is our RBI guy. He is our hottest hitter. But we all know he's going to hit 300. We all know he's going to get 80-plus RBIs. We all know he's going to hit 20-plus home runs. We need the surrounding players to help him out. And that's what we thought we did in the beginning of the year with Michael Morse. We thought, oh, we got another 25-plus home run guy, another 80-plus RBI guy. But, yeah, he's hit only 5 home runs in the second half of the season since the All-Star break. And we need a run producer. We need an extreme run producer. We need a run producer that 105 RBIs and 30 home runs. But at this point, let's talk about going forward. I want to talk about the series with the Dodgers, how high intensity the first game of the series, or last night when Bumgarner hit Puig in the first, Puig's the first batter of the game, and Bumgarner hits him, and Puig gives him this dirty look, and you know Bumgarner, he will not take any crap from anyone. So he looked right back, said some words, and both benches cleared, the bullpens came out. Whew, that fight, Puig and Bumgarner, I don't know. Bumgarner is a big country boy, 6'4", 6'3", big, strong. Puig is a scrappy, very, very strong Cuban. You know, this would have been a great fight. Of course, they would never let it that happen because both players get ejected, and we, you know, you don't want that to happen. But it was just, you saw how the intensity came out. But at the end, in the first inning, after Bumgarner did that, he had so much adrenaline pumping through his body. He had so much intensity, you know. He was leaving the ball up and over the middle, you know, and boom, Matt Kemp hit that two-run home run. And then boom, their second baseman hit it, their backup second baseman, who hit two home runs against Bumgarner. Two. Not many people have done that, but he has done that. You know, it was a very, very frustrating game because at that time we were 3.5 games back. We, you know, we won the first game of the series. We're looking, oh, we're happy. Let's go. We won the first game in 13th inning and somehow squeaked that win out. And we were all looking, yes, maybe we can get the momentum and run this for the rest of the 7 games that we have, and maybe we can beat out the Dodgers for the division. But because our loss last night, Greinke's 5-0 against the Giants. 5-0, and Kershaw's 2-0. That's 7 wins they have against the Giants. At any point, you know, maybe if we get 1 or 2 from Greinke, maybe 1 from Kershaw, we have this division. But, you know, they are just aces. They both love to pitch against the Giants because they just love the rivalry. And you know, what's Kershaw's ERA? 1.13 ERA. Just barely about 1 run a game against in his career, which is 18 games against the Giants, which is just unbelievable. So today is the game starts in 6 minutes, and today is a huge game for the Giants because you do not want the Dodgers to clinch the division against you at home. You do not want to see them celebrate on the field. Just would make my gut, would make all the guts in the Giants dugout just turn. Because, you know, this was our division to win. This was our division. We started the season out so hot. We were 9.5 games up. And in 3.5 weeks, we lost that lead. It's just, we just went to complete dive, you know. That dive started when Angel Bogaan got hurt, of course. So, I don't want to see them popping champagne tonight. I don't want to see them jumping on the mound. The Dodgers, they just get under my skin. They spend $240 million last year to pay for all these big players. You know, we're $80 million less than them, and we're still competing with them. But it's just, I just hate seeing them win. I always root against them. The Dodgers, Dodger blue is my least favorite color, of course. But I just cannot witness them clinch the division tonight. So, Angel Bogaan, he's going to be out. He had a herniated disc in his back, which he's been playing with for the last month now, and it's finally become so irritating to him that he said, you know, I have to have surgery, which he's having tomorrow, and it's a 3-month recovery time, which would take up the whole playoffs, even if we did make it to the World Series. So don't expect Bogaan back anytime soon. The good thing about this, and if as much as I don't want to look forward to next season, he'll be ready for spring training. He'll be back at full speed before spring training. So good thing he's getting it done now. I mean, I truly wish that we had him for this hopefully wild card game if we clinch, which I hope we will. We have to win one more game, or the Brewers have to lose one more game, and we clinch that second wild card spot for sure. And then the rest of the last 4 games we have at home against the Padres can really determine whether the game is in Pittsburgh, and if they have a better record than us, the 1-game playoffs in Pittsburgh, and if we have a better record than that, are the games at AT&T Park in San Francisco. But, you know, we just need to get on a roll, because this is the time where you need to be getting hot. I thought we were, you know, before this past week, I thought we were getting hot at the perfect time. Everyone was hitting the ball. You know, Panic came up. Susak came up. Duffy, all these rookies are showing how well they could play and adapt to this fast pace MLB, the pitching, the fields, the how fast and hard all the balls are hit. But then we just hit a skid. Again, I keep harping on this, but Bogaan, we really, really do miss him. The slow bats right now are a definite concern. You know, Hunter Pence, complete slump. Last night, he was just swinging. Greinke just had his number. He just couldn't hit the ball. Sandoval had a hit last night. Hopefully, it can get him going. But, again, he's just swinging at a lot of pitches out of the zone. I know that's who he is. But when you're in a slump, it kind of makes it look a lot worse. But when he's on fire and he swings at a ball and he hits a home run that's at his eyes, no one criticizes what he's swinging at. But when he goes in a slump, you know, the weight issues always come back. And then, what are you swinging at, Pablo? This is always what I'm yelling at the TV. I want to talk about the three rookies that have helped the Giants have win games in the past month. I'll talk about Joe Panik, Andrew Susak, and Matt Duffy. We'll talk about Joe Panik first. This kid has just been phenomenal. He's a second baseman, clutch second baseman, great hands, great feet, can turn the double play. He was a converted shortstop, so he's got that strong arm. He can make throws from deep in the outfield. He can go up the middle, make a play, and turn a pair real quick. But let's talk about his bat. Oh, man, if you talk about a Scudero-esque type of player, just slapping base hits to the right side of the field, slapping base hits to the left field, hitting balls up the middle, having clutch, timely hitting, you know. This is the perfect number two hitter. If we had Andrew Pagan back, he was getting on base. Panik was moving him over, getting on base too. And then Posey was just having men on base to drive in. And when Posey was hot hitting those home runs, it's because he was able to see so many pitches because Pablo was also hitting so well behind him. Pence was hitting so well behind him. So that's what we have to get back to if we want to go deep into the playoffs, if we want to become a dominant team like I think and I know we can be, because we have great pitching. We have Bumgarner. We have Peavy. I mean, Hudson, the last two starts, he's total five innings of 18 earned runs, eight earned runs, which is just incredibly high for Hudson. At this point, he's got to be hurt. He's got to have something wrong because we've all seen Tim Hudson's career. He's always killed us when he was on Atlanta, you know. I've never seen him pitch this bad, but they said that he might have a hip injury that he is nursing right now, and that could be an issue. So he's going to be pitching tonight against the Dodgers against the dreadful Kershaw, who is the best pitcher in baseball, Cy Young winner, probably going to win the MVP, going for his 20th win tonight. I would just love, it would be a great way to end the season against the Dodgers by beating Kershaw and showing that we can beat him, because every time he's come out against the Giants, it's win day for the Dodgers, because every time he just shuts us down, especially in L.A. The play in the game the play in San Francisco is still there, you know, for the wild card game. We have to have the Pirates lose. The Pirates right now are a game ahead of us, so they're the first wild card team. We're the second wild card team. The first wild card team gets the home field advantage, and they're going against the Brewers this next week, and we are going up against the San Diego Padres for four. So this can come down to the last day, and it is extremely important, I think, to get home field advantage, because then we can have Bumgarner pitching in a pitcher's ballpark like AT&T Park. Pittsburgh is definitely not a pitcher's ballpark. It is a hitter's ballpark. It's got short fences to left, got a short porch to right. You know, we don't have great power. They got great power. You know, Buster's probably our best power hitter, and they have McCutcheon, they have Garrett. You know, they have all these great big power hitters. And I think, you know, us two match up very well against each other. The Pirates were in this game last year, the first time in the playoffs in 17 years, and they lost. So they're kind of, if they play at home, you know their fans are going to be ready for them to get into the real playoffs, into the five-game series, and the seven-game series, hopefully. But as a Giants fan, I just want us to get back there, because I know if we get back there, we can really do anything, because you know, in 2010 when we won the World Series, we got into playoffs through the wild card the last week of the season. 2012, we got into the playoffs in the last day of the season. Hey, we just got to get into it. It's the second season. It's October. You know, we are an October team. We've had players that have been there. We have more experience than most teams. Our 24-year-old pitcher, Bumgarner, has been to two World Series already. You know, our 28-year-old catcher has been to two World Series already.
It's just we have the experience. We know how to play. We faced six elimination games last 2012. Six in a row. Six elimination games and pulled through. That shows that we have gone we know every aspect of the playoffs. We know winning series. We know about to lose series. You know, we just know how to play in the October. And that is a very crucial thing for the Giants to know once they get into October. And we need that win against Pittsburgh in that wild card game. The next question is, when does Michael Morris come back? Michael Morris has been on the shelf for the last couple, probably a week and a half now with some hip injury. You know, yes, get healthy, but we need that power bat. Right now, Juan Perez and Gregor Blanco are just not cutting it. We need that power bat. With him back in the lineup, it lengthens our lineup. We got Blanco up top playing center. We got Panic at the two spot playing second base. We got Buster third, hitting third behind the plate. We got Pablo at third hitting fourth. We got Pence in right field hitting fifth. And then you add Belt, who's just came back and is starting to look better. He's gotten some better at bats in the last five or six days. Then you put Morse, so that our six, seven hitters, Morse, Belt, or Belt, Morse, and that just lengthens our lineup. So pitchers can be like, oh, after I get the sixth hitter, these people do not have power. So it lengthens our lineup. It makes us more, hopefully have a better offensive strategy. I really, really hope he comes back and can pick it up right away, because he has no time to come back and slowly get back into it, because we're right in the race. We're right in at playoff time. It's go time. It's time for the Giants to be who they should be. I want to talk about Jake Peavy a little bit, how outstanding he's pitched for the Giants. You know, he came to the Giants from the Red Sox with only one win, and now he has five wins, and he's just dominant. He's throwing six-plus innings every time. And that really attribute is great for the Giants, because we don't want to use all of our bullpen and stuff like that. But I think the real reason why Jake Peavy is becoming, you know, back to where he used to be is because when he came into the league, Bruce Bochy was his coach down in San Diego. And Bruce Bochy, a former catcher, knows how to deal with pitchers, knows how to talk to pitchers, knows what goes through a pitcher's mind. So I think Peavy feels comfortable, feels like he knows that he has he's backing of his coach. He knows that Buster is a great catcher and will call a great game. I think he is more relaxed than he was with the Red Sox, because for the Red Sox, he was their ace. He was known. Him and Lester, you know, had to go out and win. You know, they had to do everything. And their offense was so bad this season. So I think that the Peavy move was just a crucial pickup for the Giants, because without him, we lose Kane, who we would have to bring up a pitcher, or Lincecum would still be pitching, and I don't even think we make the wild card game if we don't pick up Jake Peavy. That's how important I think Jake Peavy has been to the Giants. So after this break, we will go talk about the Golden State Warriors, how the next season's going to look, how training camp's going to start, how Steve Kerr is going to be different from Mark Jackson, how Clay and Curry might be more developed after playing in the World Cup, FIBA World Cup. So after this break, we'll talk all about that.
Your 3 minute break. 3 minutes of the wildest, weirdest, wackiest news to get your mind off your day. Let's get it started. A YouTube video posted earlier this week appears to show a virtual reality headset hooked up to a game where the sole objective is to squeeze an anime character's breasts. The experience is linked to a real life set of foam breasts, while the game, if you can call it that, is just generally sad in a lonely adolescent way. The Daily Dot notes that the game does nothing to dispel the unfortunate stereotypes of gamers being basement-dwelling males with zero experience interacting with the opposite sex. The game is apparently called Booby Squeezing Simulator. There's an old saying, you have to fight fire with fire. A woman in Los Angeles is starting to take the same approach with lazy dog owners. Except she's using poop instead of flames. Annie Pierce, a street artist and muralist, is so angry at her neighbors who let their canines defecate on her yard that she's posted a public warning to anyone who doesn't clean up after
their pets. You're on a Bosco break. Thanks for listening.
The cardboard sign she posted says that Pierce will, and I quote, personally follow you back to your home, wait until you get inside, pull down my pants, and take a huge dump on your doorstep and on the windshield of your car. The sign is posted at the corner of Wilshire Boulevard and Sweetser Avenue in LA and has gotten a lot of positive reaction from her neighbors. When authorities in a Chinese city realize that they're never going to be able to put a stop to texting while walking, they decided to go for minimizing the risk instead. So they set up a special lane for pedestrians who are hopelessly addicted to their mobile phones. The lane was created on Foreigner Street, a tourist hotspot in Qingdao. The sidewalk is basically divided into two halves, one labeled cell phone, walk at your own risk, and the other marked no cell phones. There are lots of elderly people and children in our street, and walking with your cell phone may cause unnecessary collisions here, said Nyong Ching, spokesperson for the district's property management company. She also hinted that the initiative was meant to be satirical, to highlight the dangers of texting and walking. In Massachusetts, police have arrested a man they say broke into a home and cooked himself a snack. Rockland police officers responded to a home at 1:40 a.m. Wednesday morning after getting a call from the homeowner. The homeowner woke up to a loud bang from the kitchen. When the resident went to investigate, he found an intruder cooking corn on the cob on the stove. He told the intruder to leave, and the two men briefly scuffled. Police finally arrested 69-year-old John Dalton and charged him with breaking and entering, with intent to commit a felony and assault and battery. Police say Dalton, who was clearly intoxicated, forced his way inside the door. I'm Harley D. signing off. This is radio.dominican.edu.
This is the way I live. Little boy still pushing big wheels. I stack my money.
You're on a Bosco break. Thanks for listening. At many universities, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender community is a visible and valued part of campus life. You are likely to find more resources, more programs, and a much wider dating pool. Students who are struggling or questioning their identity often find it easier to explore and accept who they are in college. Most schools have a dedicated club, and many offer a major or minor in LGBT studies. Despite these efforts, students who are or are perceived to be a member of the LGBT community still face harsh realities in some schools. Luckily, Dominican is not one of those campuses. Most Dominican students report that they would consider the DU campus LGBT-friendly and a welcoming place to all students. One of Dominican students, Ariana Fleming, has created a club on campus dedicated to celebrating diversity, promoting acceptance, advocating equality, and providing community. The club has been named the Pride Club, People Respecting Identity, Dignity, and Equality. Pride Club meets with purposes as diverse as its membership, which is inclusive to any sexuality, gender, or self-identification. The club gathers Thursday nights at 8 p.m. with the goal of allowing students to make connections, find comfort in a similar community, and spread awareness about LGBT issues. Pride believes in the power of education as a means of combating widespread hatred against the LGBT community and also works to offer a safe space for all individuals to gain support and be heard. Outside of Pride, there aren't a lot of open discussions about the issue. Universities are places of learning and also numerous micro-societies. The environment of a university has a direct impact on how well students learn, as well as how they interact with each other. As a freshman, Fleming felt isolated and depressed. In time, her loneliness began to take a toll on her schoolwork and affected the future of her career at Dominican. Fleming expressed, "It's unfair for students to feel unsafe and uncomfortable being who they are. I felt deep in my heart that creating the club needed to happen." The club began when she decided that she did not want another person feeling as alone as she did her freshman year. She told all of her friends to tell everyone they knew to meet the next day for the first official Pride Club meeting. Fleming welcomes all to join and reaches out to the student body by expressing, "We're here if you need us, but there's no pressure to come. The club is anonymous, so people who don't want to be identified or associated will not be." Professors work hard to ensure their classes are welcoming atmospheres in which students feel valued. According to tolerance.org, creating a supportive environment for LGBT students improves educational outcomes for all students, not just those who may identify as LGBT. The Dean of Students at Dominican University, Paul Rocanello, says that issues of sexuality are one of, if not the biggest issue of diversity on college campuses. Young adults who are trying to figure out who they are should have spaces where students can feel safe and supported. We should be supporting 100% and all resources on campus are willing to have an open relationship with students to figure out what support is needed. There's still work to be done to fix the gay stereotype, but Dominican prides itself on the efforts it makes to protect the rights of the LGBT community, to be safe and visible while embracing their identity rather than being belittled or erased. Thanks for listening. This is radio.dominican.edu.
Hello, welcome back to everyone. Now I'm going to talk about the Warriors. We're pushing up on the hour, so I'm going to make this brief. I just want to talk about the World Championships. FIBA World Championship, the United States won gold, but that's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about that Paul George injury. So we all saw Paul George going in for a block, stepping on the back of the basket and fracturing his leg, bending and twisting into weird directions. It was a very grotesque scene. But why I want to bring this up is, do we let our Warriors play in the future? You know, Curry, Clay, what happened if that happened to them? You know, would we be responsible for letting them play? Should we not let them play? Is like the Kevin Love, you know, I've gone to a new team. I'm definitely not playing in the U.S. because I don't want to be hurt before I join this team. So I was wondering, I was doing research, and I was listening to KMBR, and Bob Myers came on, the Golden State Warriors GM, and he said, after that situation happened, Curry was the first one to call him and say, "Hey Bob, what do you think I should do? Should I keep playing or should I come back, stop playing, because I don't want to risk the injury? I know we are building something great here in the Warriors. I know I'm a part of it. Should I still play or should I?" And this is what Bob Myers said, which I think is an absolute correct statement. You know, this is the United States. You can play if you want to play for your country, and if it's important to you to play for your country and represent your country and show the world that you are part of this country, absolutely go play. Play your heart out. You know, this is basketball. Anything can happen at any time. And Curry sat there, was like, "Yes, you know, this isn't very important to me. I've always thought about playing ever since watching, you know, the Dream Team in the 80s with Michael, Magic, and Bird." He was like, "This is my dream. I want to be on the Olympic team. You know, this is my first step." So, without a doubt, yes. And also, I want to talk about how well him and Clay played. They played so well that I feel like they developed, you know. They were playing with other superstars, and they saw how to become more, you know, aggressive to get their points because, you know, everyone's trying to get theirs at the same time. But they still were such great passing. Curry was not hucking up threes. He was not dribbling down, pulling up from who knows where. He was playing within himself. He was setting up from threes from the corners, which is a lot shorter in World Cup basketball than it is in the NBA. It's another 2 feet back. It's just, it's really, really amazing. And the last thought I want to leave you guys with is this. The Warriors' new stadium renderings have came out today. If you have not checked them out, you should go onto their website, www.goldenstatewarriors.com, and check it out. It is in San Francisco. It is moving right off the bay, and it's going to be on a place called Mission Bay, which is 4 blocks away from AT&T Park, down on the Embarcadero. It will be intertwined within all the UCSF stem cell research labs, and they have other labs down there. So in this town, this part of the town is becoming so great. You know, people are walking around, new restaurants, new bars are coming in. I mean, when I first used to go down there, my father has a building down there. We used to have to go down there and be so careful. We'd have to remove all the homeless people from inside of his building. But now we go down there and it's just beautiful. It's clean. All these tech companies are great. So I am so excited for the Warriors to move to the city, somewhere I can go more easily and accessibly to watch them. You know, they're going to be in a huge city. They're not going to be next to the ugly Coliseum. You know, they're going to have a brand new stadium. Oracle's a great stadium, loudest stadium in the NBA by far. We have great fans. No matter how bad we are, how good we are, we've always been there. We've always been loud. We've always been the Warriors faithful. Dub Nation, you know, I'm so excited for the seasons to start soon. I really love watching my Warriors. This is radio.dominican.edu, and thank you for listening to Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Bustoff. Please listen to me every week, every Wednesday from 6 to 7. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you.